I was with a gathering of friends and acquaintances one day when John, a sweet guy who'd been having a hard time lately, told us about a conversation he had just had. It was with his friend Tim, who had been raving about a heart blessing he had been to. John was immediately intrigued and wanted to go. He needed a blessing. His heart longed for something, and it felt like just the thing. He asked his friend when it would be and if it would be open to newcomers. Tim looked at him, a little perplexed, like he didn't expect the question, and said, "Really? You want to come with me to my next harp lesson? I didn't know you were interested in learning how to play the harp." It's funny what we see or hear, isn't it? Sometimes we hear what we expect or really want to hear. The person says harp lesson, and we hear heart blessing, maybe because that's what we want or expect somehow. It's funny, the different parts of us that are listening, what we hear when we listen with our longings, what we hear when we listen with our inner poet, whether on purpose or not, what we hear when we listen only half listening, as children sometimes do, creating inner parties out of dinner parties and Trinity fish camps in our imagination, complete with holy men and hush puppies. Words, language, what we hear versus what was intended. Language is such a funny thing. So many of you know I speak Dutch. I was born in the Netherlands, and when I was 5, we left. So I was speaking it just Dutch for the first 5 years, and I don't have an accent in it. And when I go back, my relatives tell me I sound just like everyone else, except I still get odd looks from shopkeepers when I buy things because the words I use are from the 1970s. And the idioms I use are all American. It's kind of like someone coming into coffee hour and speaking King James English. They pretty much don't know what to make of me. We forget that words, language, and phrases change over time. They change in our culture, they change in our religious institutions. We don't always notice it because it usually happens slowly, but it happens. And our relationship to those words, to that language, that changes too, because we change. Our perspective on the world shifts. We close doors on certain ways of thinking and open doors to others. We decide we do or do not agree with certain philosophies, and instead we align with other ones. It's a way of relating to the world that you could say is almost an essential part of Unitarian Universalism, this questioning, opening, realigning. For those who were raised UU, it's an ongoing value to hold teachings lightly, whatever they are. Question everything, as the bumper sticker says. And for those of us who were raised in a different religious tradition, there is a kind of fundamental perspective shift that often happens on the way here. So many who arrive at the doors of a UU church have questioned and balked, identified problems with the philosophies we were taught growing up, rejected old perspectives, struggled to be free. I always appreciate participating in our new UU, new member classes, and hearing people's stories, and getting to witness the self-differentiation and courage that is frequently required to break out of expectations, learn to think for oneself, to feel for oneself, to trust one's own intuition, sometimes at the risk of facing disappointment, even rejection from family members or others who don't fully understand. And we arrive here. Sometimes it's a gentle glide, sometimes a skidding sprint, half looking back to see if stifling old beliefs are still pursuing us. And we land here, free, or free-ish, because those old beliefs, well, they don't always just get left at the sanctuary or vestibule of the church where we learn them. They often end up in us. Whether we arrived skidding here this year or whether it was our forefathers who leapt in the 1800s, we carry something from those religious pasts. Or perhaps you could say that as a faith movement, we carry something from all those people who leapt into Unitarian Universalism all those times from all those different faiths, carrying with us now things we loved, like particular liturgy, maybe the tunes of some hymns, maybe the feel of that old sanctuary, while carefully leaving out all those things that gave us a stomachache. Or at least we try to do that. When you first come here, you may recognize some familiar Christian tunes in our hymnal, but the words might come as a surprise. Language about Jesus has been replaced with words about the beauty of nature, for example. Or, as someone pointed out to me, I didn't even realize this at first, our hymn number 114, titled Forward Through the Ages, is the same melody as an original, some say imperialistic, hymn called Onward Christian Soldiers. But the words are completely changed, demilitarized and de-Christianized. And then there's the spaces in which we gather. You'll note they are reflective, open sanctuaries created for some kind of reverence like those from the past. They even include pews sometimes, but there are no crosses, no crucifixes, no particular symbols of any one religious tradition. Those who came before us, and we too, have tried to create, indeed, a sanctuary away from that which was troubling to us or just never felt quite right. Away from theologies and words and symbols that were forced on us, that we never agreed with, that hurt us, or were passed along by people who hurt us. So that here we create room for something different to emerge, where we're not locked in battle with ideas we can't accept, and instead have room to step back and look again, where we can decide what looks true to us now and explore with our hearts and minds where our conscience leads next. We've created a space where we can be free, or, as I said, free-ish. Because you've probably noticed, try as we might, we can't completely escape it. We can't escape all those ideas and symbols and words. Maybe you've heard the joke about why you use don't make the best hymn singers. The punchline, because we're always reading ahead to see if we agree with the words. I don't think it's true about this group. You guys are great hymn singers. I think you read fast. I think that's what happens here. Because in spite of our best efforts, some of those words that some do not like still end up in our hymnals, and they end up in our books and our magazines and our worship services. I've preached before here about the word amen, and just recently three people at different times in different places mentioned having an issue with a word, three different words. All religious words. It gave me pause. It inspired this sermon. They were all words that you might say carry baggage or overtones that come from our long history. So I've been thinking about that. What do we do with or about the words and their history and the impact that they have? And I've been thinking about what it means to become truly free. And I've been thinking about our history, about those forebears who, like us, wanted out of the oppressive religious systems in which they were enmeshed, who stepped back and took a second look, exploring where their conscience led while they sought freedom. So I want to take a little detour into a bit of that history, which may give a little context for where and who we are today. I remember when studying our history, learning how churches or denominations grew, evolved, and split. How at one point a group is all together, believing mostly the same things, holding the same values, walking the same path, but then over time, something shifts and some subgroup starts to see things a different way. I found it fascinating that you can witness this process of differentiation through reading dueling treatises, magazine articles, and sermons back in the day, particularly the early 1800s when Unitarianism was just becoming a new thing. So you might have, on the one hand, you believe God terrorizes people in order to get us to behave. Well, we believe God loves and supports us as a parent would their own child. You believe certain concrete things in order to be saved from hell in an afterlife. We don't believe in supernatural places of eternal punishments. You believe I'm a heretic and threaten the foundations of your entire belief system. Well, I believe you're a foolish nit lost in the backwater of your own mistake and unwillingness to see a larger truth. Okay, so that's not word for word what was written. But I do remember it got heated and angry. And while in the 1800s heresy was no longer punishable by death, it is clear that the two groups with their widening ideologies could no longer share the same sanctuary, the same ministers, or the same name. They split, and Unitarianism was born. A new denomination, a new movement, with room to explore different ways of believing. It was created to have a wider view, an encompassing view. A religious movement with, as its highest ideal, a new openness and a new inclusiveness. A yearning to break out of what was referred to as narrow creed and ultimately embrace wisdom in all traditions. So this new denomination was born, separate from the Christianity of its past, in a split, a painful rift that I imagine was much more like a family feud than a polite understanding of agreeing to disagree. One author writing about that time put it this way: at issue were such differing conceptions that they couldn't even agree on what to argue about, so they argued about everything. Following the logic of family infighting, one dispute led to another. Eventually, the argument came down to who really owned the communion silver and the building. I picture friendships broken, trust undermined, a bitter taste in the mouth on both ends. So, this all has left us in an interesting place. As Unitarian Universalists, we evolved out of the Christian tradition, and we embrace Christianity as one of our sources. But we also split off from Christian churches, and that split carried a good deal of negative emotional energy. So as a movement, we have an interesting and sometimes uneasy, little bit conflicted relationship with Christianity and all it represents. We embrace Christianity, and we've rejected it. We embrace theism, meaning a belief in God, and many among us do not believe in God. We encompass a whole range of beliefs that various people hold at various times, and some of them are in tension with each other. Sometimes a single person can hold beliefs that appear to contradict each other, and I know that only because I've seen it in myself. But back to those words. Even as some of you have shared with me a dislike for some religious terms, others of you have shared with me that there are terms that you like and appreciate. Someone told me just recently they missed hearing the word God. And I've heard before an appreciation for the nuances that religious language can express. And I think, too, about the rich world of religious literature that uses these terms, writings that contain in their midst gems of wisdom and hope. So I've been thinking about words themselves just as a concept. Like I picture them like containers. Containers for meaning, certainly, but also containers for feelings. Words are like that. So when I say a table, I picture a table in my living room. It's wood, oak stain, and I happen to have affection for it. You may picture a bright yellow Formica kitchen table. Perhaps you have affection for it too, because you've eaten breakfast there with your partner and children for years. Or when I say the word aunt, I think of my beloved aunts. I picture a kind face, a warm hug, bright homes. But for someone else, the word aunt may conjure up edgy or absent or disheveled or a variety of other impressions. And religious words are similar in that they have meaning poured into them over centuries of definition and redefinition. The word God meant one thing to Christian Calvinists from whom we split. The word God meant something very different to early Unitarians. The word salvation meant one thing to them, a different thing to early Unitarians. And for us, hearing these words now, I expect we hear some of what God got poured into those words over time, before our time, outside ourselves. And I expect some of what we hear is a reflection of our own experiences, kind of echoing back at us for good or for ill. But here's the thing. Words aren't static. You've probably noticed this. Words are not defined once and held forever the same, with the same meanings, emotions, connotations, and everything. Words evolve. They emerge from old meanings, as we who use them also emerge from old understandings too. Sometimes people even intentionally work to redefine terms that used to mean one thing, to broaden it or diffuse it or to change it altogether. A generation reclaimed the word queer. Black people have, in some ways, reclaimed the N-word. I saw a lot of t-shirts last year reclaiming the term nasty woman. And the word they is now being used as a singular, non-gendered pronoun. We reclaim, recycle, and repurpose words all the time. And the earliest Unitarians, they did this too. In fact, the word Unitarian itself was originally a put-down. William Ellery Channing began the reclamation process when he preached a sermon called Unitarian Christianity, saying, in effect, "You can say what you want about that word, but I claim it as mine, and I will give it my meaning and my purpose. And now I'm going to tell you what that is, so listen up." And people did. Still, finding our ultimate freedom is not always so simple as looking into the history of a word or our history with a word, understanding it all better, and reclaiming that word anew. I think of words that trigger me, and I'm reminded of the story about the boy who would react violently whenever he saw kreplach, a type of Jewish dumpling. I don't know if you've ever heard this story. Every time he saw a piece of kreplach in his soup, he screamed, "Ah, kreplach!" So his mother decided to teach him not to be afraid of kreplach. She took him to the kitchen and rolled out some dough, just like a pancake, she said. And he smiled, "Oh yeah, just like a pancake." Then she took a piece of meat and rolled it into a ball. "Just like a meatball," she said. "Oh, yes, just like a meat boy. Meatball," the little boy said. That is not a Freudian slip. "Just like a meatball," said the little boy. Then she rolled up the meat in the dough and held it up. "Just like a dumpling," she said. "Oh, just like a dumpling," the boy said and smiled. Then she dropped it into the soup and put it in front of the little boy, and he screamed, "Ah, crap lock!" So, words, concepts, experiences, history, what is said, what we hear, what triggers us, what opens us up. Whether we want a heart blessing or have come longing for a heart blessing, whether we would like to go to a dinner party or whether we are here to experience a rich, unfolding inner party, we are here together today. Whatever our particular relationship to the words we use or avoid, we have all made it through the experiences of our past, of our collective history, and the personal history of each and every one of us. That amazing, beautiful, rich, difficult, challenging fullness through which we filter everything. We have come together from our separate pasts with their uniqueness and their commonalities, streams merging, new horizons calling. Where will we take it from here?